What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent, coming drunker than ever and from a bachelor party in Montreal, recording remotely with my co-host Matt Odell, looking at him through a computer screen right now. Matt, how the fuck are we doing today?
There is so much dedication here by Marty. He is already lit, so this should be a good one.
I am pretty lit. I'm sitting here. I've got a friend from high school sitting next to me. He's got a microphone in his hand. Don't speak at all. Very little if you have to. Been explaining Bitcoin to him all day. We've been getting lunch here in Montreal, and I think I've been breaking through. Have I been breaking through to you, Craig?
I don't remember Jesus about Bitcoin on the Ten Commandments. So I don't believe in it.
You got to hold the mic closer to your mouth, please.
Sorry.
And Jesus did throughout the moneymakers in the world. So Jesus did talk about Bitcoin at one point, if not indirectly. Before we get into the vast topics that we have to talk to today, we got to give a shout out to our sponsors, the Cash App. You know all about them. They're the number one finance app in the App Store for the last 2 years. They're the first P2P payments app to let you freaks buy Bitcoin. And guess what? They're letting you deposit Bitcoin on their app, and they're slowly allowing you to withdraw Bitcoin to BEC32 addresses on their app as well. On top of that, they got their Boost program. You get the debit card. You go to merchants like Chipotle, DoorDash, local coffee shops, Whole Foods. The list goes on. I believe Taco Bell's on that list as well. You save money there. And then on top of that, if you use the promo code STACKINGSATS, if you've already downloaded Cash App, tell your friends. Use the promo code STACKINGSATS. They're going to get $5, and $5 is going to be donated to a charity very near and dear to our hearts. That's Al's Lacrosse out of Chicago. Outreach with lacrosse at schools. So go to the local app store that you frequent today and download the Cash App. And then after that, go to www.unchained-capital.com/vaults to check out Unchained Capital's 2 of 3 multi-sig solution for your Bitcoin custody. If you're looking to secure your Bitcoin and bring in somebody like Unchained into the mix, they will be the second of a 2 of 3 multi-sig solution for you. And on top of that, they have their loan program. So if you have your Bitcoin in a vault with them, they're going to allow you to get a Bitcoin collateralized USD loan right in the same suite. So go to unchained-capital.com/vaults, and you're going to get 3 free months of Saifedean Ammous's The Bitcoin Standard Bulletin research paper. It's 3 free months, and then you're also going to get their vault program. There's 2 or 3 multi-sig. It works with Ledger, Trezor, and other hardware devices. Go check it out. Matt, I'm slurring my words already. We're not even through the intro yet. What a fucking week it has been. How are you?
I mean, I thought you killed the ad read. It was well done. It was impressive.
Thank you, sir.
I'm really fucking pumped right now. If you can't tell through the screen, the current price of Bitcoin is 94 sats per cent, and the current block height is 585,982.
Ooh, we got mempool stats at all anywhere?
A mempool is at 43,000 unconfirmed transactions.
Ooh, a little higher than expected. What a fucking week it's been, dude. Like, I know we're not at 13K like you were calling for this time last week, but given that fact, I'm still happy with where we are. What are your thoughts? So since the last time we met here on Rabbit Hole Recap, we've had two Capitol Hill hearings, one in the Senate, one in the House, and we've had Steve Mnuchin come out and say the cash has never been used for nefarious action in its whole existence in the U.S. dollar, at least. What a week it's been.
Yeah, we had Powell Fed comments. We had Trump tweet. Then we had the Mnuchin presser, and then we had the Libra 2 days of Libra conferences, and we have Joe from Squawk Box is just completely woke and just loves Bitcoin now.
Hey, Joe Kernan, if you're listening right now, the invitation is open. If you ever want to come across the Williamsburg Bridge, Matt and I are here with open mics, ready to talk about your Bitcoin wokeness, you know?
I still can't believe this is real. I feel like I'm in shock. I'm still in shock. I don't know. I'm still trying to really digest everything that's happened.
What has shocked you the most? The fact that the government is even broaching the subject? The fact that the government is as well versed on the subject as it seems to be, or the fact that people are as sort of open minded towards Bitcoin as some of the politicians on Capitol Hill and some of the talking heads on mainstream media have been?
Marty, they defined shitcoins in U.S. Congress. What the fuck? How did that happen? This is the most ridiculous timeline ever. I don't know. First of all, a lot of the politicians seem to get it. Really surprised in that respect. A lot of them understand the value prop of Bitcoin, understand that, you know, allowing innovation here in America is best case scenario for America, the country. Who was that?
Are we talking about Patrick McHenry here?
Yeah, Patrick McHenry.
Patrick McHenry came out and said, I'm looking at my buddy Craig right now, sitting to my right here. He's got a mic, but I'm not going to let him talk that much. But Patrick McHenry, a representative out of North Carolina, came out and said, Bitcoin, the protocol developed by Satoshi Nakamoto and built by a bunch of other individuals after he left the program, cannot be killed. Any other government that has tried to kill it has been unsuccessful in that endeavor. We better come to grips with the fact that Bitcoin is going to survive from here into perpetuity and adapt to that. That is a huge admission from somebody who is a ranking member of the House Financial Committee. So it's him, it's Maxine Waters, and then it's him. And he's like the second in command after her. So having him stand up, and not only did he, so he started in the morning on Squawk Box yesterday, and then he went to Capitol Hill and he had an opening statement and he had questions during the hearing, and then he had a closing statement. And the closing statement, in my mind, was one of the most impassioned, needed speeches on Capitol Hill that we've seen in years, maybe decades, possibly a century.
He said unstoppable force was his words. That's crazy. First of all, I love it. Second of all, you know, I kind of disagree with him. Like, I think there's ways for them to stop it, but I'm happy with that. Like, that's fantastic.
You're not mega. How could they fucking stop it, Matthew? How could they stop it?
I mean, they'd have to get really aggressive, right? And that's part of his statement. Part of his statement was the Chinese, who are, you know, trample on their citizens' rights, even they haven't been able to successfully stop it. So, like, would have to be really aggressive.
Yeah, he referenced the Chinese firewall in particular, saying the Chinese firewall, something that's been a stalwart in the digital age of deflecting information from reaching Chinese citizens, has been basically ineffective in stopping Bitcoin, which is a huge admission. Do we have fifth pillar actors in the U.S. government right now?
I mean, you got to imagine some of these guys own Bitcoin, right? Like, they're supposed to.
There's no doubt in my mind that McHenry owns Bitcoin. That dude is sitting on a fat stack of Bitcoin in my mind.
Who? Patrick?
Yeah, Patrick.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he has it disclosed. They have, like, there's some of congressmen and women. I think, like, Kirsten Gillibrand had it disclosed that she owned some. And so they have, like, an official disclosure form now that they're supposed to fill out if they own crypto.
No, this is,
but who knows?
This is something on par of, like, Donald Trump Jr. owning Bitcoin instead of Donald Trump Sr. And, like, he's definitely got people in his family. Actually, I shouldn't say definitely. I'm speculating. This is huge speculation right now. I'm just jacked drunk.
I think Jared Kushner is probably his Bitcoin guy. But maybe it's Donald Trump Jr. But yeah. So maybe he has kids who have it. Maybe he. It's really hard to enforce disclosures in an age of Bitcoin. Because there are ways to get it with cash, and there are ways to protect your privacy. So So they could own it. And if they do own it, they have a direct incentive to see the price go up. So, you know, greed rules the day in that situation, right?
Exactly right. So that's the question, I guess, that is bubbling at the top of my mind right now. Like, is the power of the potential of Bitcoin powerful enough to sway individual politicians into making it a reality, or is the other contingent of politicians like Steve Mnuchin, who came out this morning on Squawk Box and said that cash has never been used for nefarious activities, are they going to win out? Like, is the entrenched incumbent going to win this? It will probably be a battle of attrition in the long run, right? Because it is a battle of logic and basically utility at the end of the day. So is Steve Mnuchin coming out this morning and saying that the U.S. dollar, cash-wise, like cash dollars, not being used for nefarious activities, sort of a framing for him to villainize Bitcoin, in your opinion?
So, well, first of all, I'd like to say Joe pushed back on him on that, and it was fucking beautiful to watch. I've never seen anything like that from mainstream media. Like, that was – he keeps impressing me every single fucking time. The other thing is, Mnuchin, in his presser, he was, like, constantly saying illicit activities. He brought up terrorism. He brought up drugs. But he also was pretty clear in saying that speculation is fine. That if he's like, I'm not going to comment whether or not the price is high or low, which means to me that he thinks it's low, obviously. But that speculation is fine. You have regulated entities in America that do KYC to you, yada yada yada. So the question is, like, they kind of seem like they're setting up like a war against like private Bitcoin usage. Right. And like self custody and stuff like that. But in general, with both the presser and the Libra hearings, I've come away being way more optimistic about how the U.S. government, our government, is going to handle these things. I expected this was like the best possible outcome that I could see.
And that's sort of where I may disagree with you is, are they, so that's where the ambiguity lies for me, is it was very clear that Mnuchin and the U.S. government is sort of keen on handcuffing the on and off ramps. They want to make sure that the on and off ramps to buying, selling, accessing Bitcoin are completely KYC AML'd. And I think they've left open this sort of ambiguity of, like, me and you, not saying that we're doing this, but like, if we wanted to send Bitcoin transactions between each other, we're technically not KYC AML'd entities. We're individuals sending Bitcoin to each other. So after this whole week, I think for me, that's where the most ambiguity lies, is individual use of Bitcoin. And do you think they're, I don't want to say avoiding that subject in particular, but there's their focus on institutions over individuals says anything. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's been their game plan this whole time, right? I mean, I don't think in that respect, nothing has really changed for me, because that's how I assumed they were going to combat this stuff. First of all, Meltem did a great job in Congress. One of the things she said, she made clear, is that, you know, you can enforce these KYC laws on a per app basis, like on the fringes of the sides of the protocol. You don't do it at you can't do it at the protocol level. I see them still pushing for that. I mean, look, every American exchange, pretty much every exchange that officially allows Americans to trade at it requires KYC now, right? So will we see that start seeping into wallets? And then the real issue could be, Thamos had a response to the unstoppable force comment by Patrick McHenry, where he said, like one of the avenues that you could think about if they wanted to stop Bitcoin would be, or stop private transactions, would be to attract miners to mine in America and then make those miners comply with the regs. So there's issues. There's ways that they can attack this stuff.
Do you think they'd be more compelled to do that in China, which has been the predominant mining geography of the world up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, you could see a world where, like, the Chinese miners are complying with the Chinese regs and the U.S. miners are complying with the U.S. regs. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important that you can mine through Tor, right? That's why mining distribution is important. The question will be if there's the political will for that. And my takeaway from this week has been that political will doesn't exist. There is way more support for Bitcoin in Washington than I thought. These guys get it way more than I thought. I hope a bunch of them just went out and bought some Bitcoin so that they're even more incentivized to continue this route.
Like, I feel... Have you played Star Fox 64 before?
Yes.
You know, the episode 2... When the rabbit's like, it's quiet, too quiet. And then they get ambushed. I feel like that's the point we're at right now as Bitcoiners. It's quiet. It's too quiet. It's too good. Why is this too good to be true? It feels like there's been a concerted effort to get in front of this narrative, specifically by the U.S. government with Powell, with Trump, with Munchen, and now the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. Like, where are our blind spots? I guess that's the question. If there are any to be sort of found.
I mean, I have some blind spots in mind, but I don't really want to talk about them. Like, why would I? Yeah. I mean, I think that to have like a solid basis, like argument about anything, like you should know how to argue back against yourself really well. I don't want to give, why would we give them the playbook? Let's just hope that we,
I agree. That was a trick question. I was testing you. No, but it has honestly been a crazy, it's almost been surreal where it's making me question, like, are they worried about the current state of the financial system? And are they, or some politicians at least, trying to like create a quasi insurance policy by backing Bitcoin and being for the free and open source nature of this monetary system?
I mean, we saw it kind of fall along party lines, right?
Yes.
Which it was mostly Republicans that supported.
Before we get into party lines, can we shit on Brad Sherman for equating Libra to 9/11?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. What a motherfucker.
Right? What a fucking asshole. Brad Sherman...
His line was 9/11 was the most innovative thing that's happened over the last decade. Was that it? Two decades. What did he say? Century? I don't know. What was his period?
Of this century, yeah. I believe of the 21st century, as he was alluding to. But he like even had like a visual like arm like saying like the planes flying into a building were innovation, and Libra is a innovation on par with that, which is fucking disgusting.
No, he said
I feel like I can't speak to this. You're a fucking New Yorker. Like, you born and raised in New York. How does that make you feel as a New Yorker?
No, yeah, I mean, it was. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my ears. I mean, like, you kind of could because it was fucking Brad Sherman, right? But that was a new low for him. He said Libra could be worse. It could be worse than 9/11. I fucking hate Libra. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
What does that say about the state of current discourse, or not even discourse, but like the state of the mentality of the people in charge? Like, if they have to defend against Libra, comparing it to 9/11, like, how scared are they? Like, are they scared, or is Brad Sherman just a fucking egotistical maniac looking for attention?
I mean, I think this is like their classic playbook, right? Like, that we saw this right after 9/11. I mean, we had the Patriot Act was put in place. They constantly, we saw with the school surveillance cameras, they do it because they fear monger over Sandy Hook happening. So they take fear and they weaponize the fear to get more control over the populace. So it happens all the time. It's a classic move. He took it a little bit too far, you know, but expect these guys to constantly, I mean, you said it great in the Bent multiple days now. We expect these guys to literally throw every illegal thing and blame it at Bitcoin. And environmental effects, they'll blame it. Maybe there'll be like an actual real terrorist attack that was like partially financed by Bitcoin. And then they just run it down, you know, run it down with it. Even though it was mostly financed with USD, they'll blame Bitcoin.
So let's go down this path. The ongoing villainization of Bitcoin as a funding mechanism for quote unquote nefarious activities will be used as fear, uncertainty, and doubt against the system. Like, you should not use Bitcoin because it enables this thing. And that's the reason why I've been writing the Bent, why I have this week, is because I feel like I've been noticing these concerted efforts by individuals within entrenched institutions trying to demonize Bitcoin. And that's what, like, people fall too easily for these narratives. And that's what you have to be able to call it out at face value. Like, hey, if they're saying Bitcoin will lead to terrorists and in the world ending, you have to question their motives off the bat. Like, yes, it's possible that terrorists and money launderers and drug dealers can use Bitcoin as a tool. But what you have to realize as an individual is they can also use the fucking wheel as a tool too. They can use a bike to go deal drugs, to go cause a terrorist attack. Like, these, Bitcoin is just a tool, a monetary tool. A wheel is just a tool. And what you have to realize when these politicians, like Brad Sherman in particular, come out and try to demonize Bitcoin in this way, saying you cannot use this tool, you just have to realize that the tool can be used universally and people can use it in bad ways. And you have to decide, is it worth not using that tool at all for everybody because somebody uses it in a bad way? I would argue Bitcoin in particular as a tool can be used for much more good than it will be used for bad. And I think over time, we will come to find that to be true. And I would actually argue that the instances in which Sherman would argue Bitcoin being used as a tool for bad are more highlighted in this current sort of fiat monetary system that we live in, because it's easier to leverage fiat currency to do the bad shit that Sherman's talking about today.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Obviously, Bitcoin's a net benefit. We obviously both believe that. And as for criminals that use Bitcoin, they can catch them with good old fashioned police work, just like they catch all the criminals that use the U.S. dollar right now. So can you believe he came out? Yeah.
And not Sherman, but Munchen came out today and tried to say that fucking cash is not used for any nefarious purpose.
Wait, did you see, like, he didn't disclose, like, supposedly he didn't disclose, like, $100
million? He had $100 million in the Caymans, dude. Just chilling in a tax haven.
Yeah, and his, you know, and Trump knows all about it, too. All these guys know about it. So, like, that's, you know, they can say what they want. Look, no one who was watching that segment believed Mnuchin. And that is a huge step forward from where we were 2 weeks ago, in my opinion. Like, I watched that segment, and I was like, wow. Like, I don't have to, like our mainstream media reporters are starting to pick up the torch for us. And we don't have to, like, respond to everything. It just gets responded to directly in the clip. Like, that's fantastic.
Let's give another shout-out to Joe Kernan, one of the hosts of Squawk Box. Is he chasing Twitter clout, or is he a full-on Bitcoiner? What do you think?
Doesn't matter. The incentives work. Either way.
Perfect answer. But it's crazy to see. Like, if... because the last 2 days in particular in the Bent, and I've written about Squawk Box for 2 days in a row. I've written about CNBC for 2 days in a row. And I would have, if you told me 6 months ago that I was going to write about CNBC in a positive light 2 days in a row in the Bent, I would have been like, fuck you. There's no way that's happening. But it is crazy to see You got to give credit where credit is due. Joe Kernan, in particular, on Squawk Box, has been asking some pretty hard questions, Bitcoin related, to Steve Mnuchin, the fucking Secretary of the Treasury. He asked him some very hard questions that I have not seen a mainstream media reporter ask an authority figure in quite a while. Like, he was being very, what's the word I'm looking for? He's very, very thorough in his questioning, which everybody is used to throwing up softballs and getting back sort of scripted answers that they're expecting. But I feel like Joe, the last couple days, last week in particular, has been being a bit more of a thorn in the side of authority that you're not used to seeing in the mainstream media.
Yeah, and you know, like, his co-host Sorkin for a while was like the crypto guy on the show, but he's like pretty statist. So like, he always let us down.
Oh, he's very statist.
Yeah. Yeah. So he always let us down, and now we have like, I don't know, he seems like a Bitcoiner. He seems like he gets it, you know, and he's asking the right questions, and I fucking love it. It's fucking dope.
That's all you can. Why is it this hard to get mainstream media reporters and journalists to be good journalists and good reporters? Like, this is it blows my mind that Joe Kernan this week has been refreshing, and it's like, oh my God, thank God he's asking these questions. Like, why do you have to say that?
I think one of the reasons is Joe's not restricted from purchasing any assets, right, that he talks about. Like, I'm assuming he's active in the stock market and stuff, right?
Yeah, I would imagine he's not BK, where he's running a fund and has to pump like Nautilus coin and Ripple and all that shit.
But I mean, I actually think that's positive. I think part of the reason we've had such issues is if you're a mainstream journalist covering Bitcoin, you think it's ethically impure for you, or sometimes your organization says you can't own Bitcoin. So like, if you're someone like Popper, for instance, like Nathaniel Popper, like, you wrote a book in 2013 about Bitcoin, but
digital
you didn't
gold.
Fucking buy any, right? So now you're just sitting here and you're just super salty. Like, he's just everything and it's not even his fault. Like, I would be salty too. Like I would be so salty in that situation.
His article this week was salty as fuck. What did he say? He said, I don't want to say this outright, but I think it was something like akin to like Bitcoin is for like not terrorists. What did he say? He came out with an article yesterday, which was like completely anti-Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin's not working.
It's an index for measuring the desire to launder money in the world.
Yeah, it's an index for Tom or Craig here reads the New York Times, and it's an index for laundering money throughout the world. That's not what it is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so I feel like in that way, like, kind of these like ethical disclosures or whatever actually they hurt the journalistic integrity, right? Because like, well, first of all, they all have stake in US dollar in the USD, right? They all have stake in like the current economy. So they're not even unbiased from the story to begin with. And then the second thing is like, if you actually get Bitcoin, then I think your immediate next realization is, holy shit, I need to make sure I get as much Bitcoin as possible before everyone else does, which is, I mean, that was my realization. So how do you level those two? Like, how does someone get it, not buy any, and then stick around, still be a reporter in like 4 years, still covering it, right? And have the experience, because all this stuff takes time and you need to actually like learn about it and, you know, educate yourself. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like in a lot of ways the disclosure, so buy some and disclose it, but they don't even do that. They just say, we disclose, I don't own any.
That's why we're lucky here at TFTC, where we don't have to worry about that traditional financial journalistic burden of, I mean, obviously we own Bitcoin, but
oh, I actually don't own any Bitcoin. I think it would hurt my journalistic integrity.
Dude,
yeah.
I came up here on a flight today, actually dropped my hardware wallet out the plane. Fucking lost all of it. I'm going to start rebuilding though.
Here you go complimenting Air Canada, and then they lose your hardware wallet. That's pretty,
they had too much. They had got too much goddamn leg space. It's too much area to lose your fucking hardware wallet. I'm gonna call them. Hopefully, I'll find it. But yeah, we'll figure it out. But it is It's been a weird week, dude. Like, what's the so let's go back to the hearings. What is this week meant for Libra? Will Libra launch? Will it not? Has it been good? Has it been bad? Is it just temporary noise that politicians wanted to hop on and talk about and they'll forget about in a week or two? Or is this like a serious, like, motherfuckers, this isn't going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think the odds of it launching just went down significantly. And I mean, I think it's exactly what we were saying. We've been saying for a while now is like they either aren't allowed to launch, or the reason they're allowed to launch is because they bend the knee like tremendously. And then it's clearly not competing with Bitcoin. So
how about David Marcus giving the E-Corp behind the closed doors fucking pitch to the federal bank and in the Senate, in front of the Senate Banking Committee? Like, he literally said, we will work with you. We will track transactions. We will do KYC AML. We will do whatever you want. We'll make it happen. Just follow us. And for, like, David, if you're listening to this right now, I know the leader of Facebook Libra listens to this podcast. You're supposed to do that behind closed doors, bruh. Do not do that in front of the whole public. They know the charade is up as soon as you do that.
Yeah, he also said the E-Corp line, which was like, if you don't let us do it, like, China will do it. And then we'll all be using the Chinese version.
Yeah. So what does that say about the current state of corporations in cryptocurrency? Are they completely far gone? Are they too far gone? Will they ever come around? Will they ever adopt Bitcoin?
Can I just say that, like, Mr. Robot was just, I feel like it's like Bitcoin research at this point. And it's
right?
Mr. Robot.
It's too perfect, dude. Literally, word for word. I was listening to him on, it was Tuesday, give his testimony about how they would basically make it so any central bank or government could know who's using the Libra cryptocurrency. It's like, you are giving the E-Corp pitch in front of the whole world. It was almost word for word. It was almost verbatim, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that is the pitch that they should be making, but to make it in public is pretty... I mean, it shows that they're worried, right? That they don't think that it'll launch otherwise. They need to, like, point it out straight up to the congressman. This is what we're going to do for you.
Well, I think that may be the biggest sort of thing to glean from the rest of this week is that Bitcoin, maybe not even Bitcoin specifically, but cryptocurrency and disgustingly, quote-unquote, digital assets and crypto is on the radar of governments and institutions around the world, and they're trying to react to it. But I feel like after observing the last 7 days of announcements and hearings that these people are way out of their depth. Am I wrong? Am I naive in saying that? Should we underestimate our, quote, I don't even want to call them an enemy, but should we underestimate the people that are competing with us on a monetary scale?
I thought they got it more than I expected. I mean, I had a low bar set, but they beat all my expectations. They seem to, in general, understand it more than I expected. I think it's always a bad idea to underestimate anyone. You should always go with caution. I think that the divide between them was way bigger than I expected. And I think that Bitcoin has a lot of defenders in our Congress. And I think that time is ticking. I think the longer it takes to make any kind of definitive action against Bitcoin, the stronger Bitcoin gets, the more people own Bitcoin, the harder it'll be to have the political will to do anything about it. And I think these sessions, while I wish they happened later on, they happened sooner than I expected because of Libra, because Facebook kind of forced the hand. I think they show that we're still a bit off from any kind of real political will or, you know, to do some kind of definitive action, trying to, like, really the way you would, like, what we would see is like a clampdown on self-custody, basically, I think, which would be you can't withdraw your coins.
No, so you get an audience with any speaker you want, any senator you want. What is your pitch to them other than them buying Will with the millennials of the world of like, yeah, I'm up on cryptos. I get it. This is the future. What is your pitch to them of why it benefits them and their
constituency
pursuit of, yeah, re-election or benefiting their constituents?
I mean, I think Bitcoin is better money, and I think that it's going to be pretty damn hard to stop. So I think you should want your constituents to have access to the best money we've ever had. Otherwise, you know, we'll get left behind. Like America will get left behind.
Yeah, no, and I think harping back to your previous comments, like today, this week, if anything, was like an illumination of the I don't want to say inconsistency, but so the lack of coordinated understanding on behalf of the government, which, like you alluded to, works in our favor. Like the more confused they are, this is the better way to describe it. This week, if anything, has highlighted the confusion that exists between individual regulators and regulatory agencies between each other that have to coordinate to make regulation about this, and they don't even know how to fucking communicate about this between each other, let alone communicating to the greater public about it and setting policy about it. So I think this works in our advantage more than anything is a lack of understanding from our incumbent government system.
Yeah. But like I said, I just think they understand it more than I expected. I was pleasantly surprised, but that might not be a good thing. But it seemed like they, in general, the understand. I wasn't like ripping my hair out, screaming at the screen. You know, I was like, oh yeah, that's like pretty close.
Right.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it was like a very, and that was a long, long hearing. Both days. The second day was like 6 hours. The first day was like 8 hours. Like 14 hours of hearing between Tuesday and yesterday. But we've spent 37 minutes on this topic, and Matt's got a closing comment on this topic.
One more thing is the Mnuchin presser started this all off, and he took a question and answer at the end of his presser, and there was like a couple questions trickled in, and they weren't very good questions. And then he was like, finally, he's like, okay, we could take non-cryptocurrency questions. And like a million reporters wanted to ask him about Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. So still, as far as mind share goes of the American populace, like this is not something people are concerned about, right? Like they're more concerned about which face is on the 20. So we can take ease in that.
Yeah. And white supremacy. I felt bad for him at that point. Like, is that, I don't want to get too, I'm drunk right now. I'm at a bachelor party, but that particular instance of that press conference was like, are you fucking kidding me, journalists? Like, this is a dude, the Secretary of the Treasury. I don't love him. I'm not a big fan of him, but like he has a core competency that he's focused on. Like, he's not going to fucking answer whether or not Donald Trump is racist. Like, I don't want to get too far into it.
And Matt, wait, let me hit you because I've been listening to this idiot all day for 4 hours and 3 bottles of wine. What is that little snippet to the common layman that says, be interested in this and tell your rep to be interested in this? Like, what about it benefits their life where they get excited about it? I have a speculative interest, but beyond that, I'm still waiting to be convinced.
He's looking for the human rights cause.
No, or anything. Sell me.
You know, I think Bitcoin, like I said earlier, I think Bitcoin is the best money we've ever had. And I think that it's very low adoption right now. So I think that if you buy it now, like the price should go up. It's like, that's the thesis. So, your congressman shouldn't stop you from getting into the best money that's ever existed right now, while people in China are doing it, while people in Turkey are doing it, while people all around the world are doing it, and you're not allowed to do it. Like, that doesn't sound like a free country to me. So
this doesn't sound very American at all, does it? But we spent 40 minutes on the topic of the conversation of the last week. It is probably not going to go away anytime soon. This will probably just heat up from here. Like we were talking about it last week. We hopped on right after Trump's tweet. Like, we were freaking out about Trump's tweet last week. That feels like 6 months ago at this point. And we're on to the next topic. And actually, this is an important topic that we should touch on and talk about pretty thoroughly. The wasabi information that's come to light over the last couple of days. Apparently, it's not even apparent. It's if you are mixing with wasabi and you have more than the minimum mixing limit, and you're going to have change with your original mixes, that change dust may follow you throughout your mix. So it's something to be aware of. And then on top of that, if you're creating new wallets within Wasabi, you have to double, triple, quadruple check that you close out of the software before you open that new wallet, because you could get stuck putting UTXOs in a wallet that is not what you think it is, right? You can be putting UTXOs in an old wallet of which you forgot the passphrase. The example we're using right now off the top of my head is Vake, our buddy Vake. He had a kerfuffle, if you will.
Yeah, he lost a million sats on it. He lost 10 million sats on it. For the second thing, the key is to switch wallets in Wasabi, you close out the software. Okay. It gives you a warning. It shows a little yellow warning on it when you do it. Switch out of the software. For the first thing, we've known this. One of the guys from the Samurai team wrote it out really well to really illustrate the issue here. So the issue is obviously, so if you put in 5 Bitcoin into Wasabi, it splits it up into UTXOs that are the size of the coin join round, because everyone has to have the same amount, which in this case is 0.1 Bitcoin. So when it does that, it's shaving it off every time, right? So it takes the 5 and then it makes it 4.9 and a 0.1 and mixes the 0.1. As it does that, that original UTXO, you can track it as it's like dropping off the
shaving the coin join. Shaving, yeah. Fees throughout the whole way, right?
Right. Now, this is not completely true the whole time because Wasabi does mix other amounts. If someone else has like a 0.8 UTXO and you can mix a 0.8 UTXO, it'll do it one round with them or whatever. Like, it'll also shave off other ones. But and the best way you can combat that is by making sure to remix. You want to do at least a second round. And one of the ways to do that, to do that without doing extra manual remixes, is to set your default anonymity set to at least over 100. So if you set it to like 101, then it automatically does at least 2 rounds of Wasabi for every UTXO you have. The second thing is that change you have at the very end, the unmixed change you have at the end is like the most toxic change, is the way I think about it.
Because it basically followed you through the whole mixing stuff, right?
Right, exactly. So that change you have to be like very careful with. You should never be combining your change. And to also reduce this attack vector is like you should not combine your outputs as much as possible. So this really does highlight the main issue here with all these privacy tools, is that there's a lot of pitfalls in the way to use them, right? It takes a lot of user interaction, and if a user fucks up one little thing, then they could compromise their privacy. So you have to be very careful. Samurai attempts to get around this by doing the method where they have... it's a transaction 0, which puts it into the premix.
They pay the fee up front and then mix after that, right?
Right, and then you have unlimited remixes. So their claim is that it's harder to analyze that, and it seems like that is possibly the case. But either way, I mean, look, in this situation, I guess what, like, I mean, you could use both in combination. You could use it to spend. I mean, one of the issues here is the unmixed change in wasabi can be like 9 million sats or something. Like, it could be just under the 0.1 amount. And, like, that's decent amount of money. So, like, I don't see people just leaving that change there. But you have to, like, be very careful about it. And so wasabi goes with the coin control method, where they expect you to properly, you know, use those UTXOs afterwards and send them without leaking additional privacy, without combining them in certain ways and stuff like that. And Samurai, on the other hand, basically has a mixed pool, and an unmixed pool is in the wallet, is the ultimate goal, and that's what they have right now. But it'll be even better UI wise when they overhaul it. And they have their post spend transaction types, where you can basically like simulate a coin join among your own wallet or with a friend or something like that. So when you actually do the spend, the final spend is also a coin join itself. So hopefully we see like Wasabi implement some stuff like that as well. You know, yeah, these are things that you have to keep in mind all the time.
Would you agree that this stuff is somewhat temporary? Like, if we were to get Schnorr signatures and have the ability to do P2EP payments, this would be completely irrelevant, or is that a false assumption?
I mean, I think, you know, Schnorr helps, especially on, like, the cost side. And, you know, if you have, like, MuSig or, you know, some kind of SIG aggregation, then, you know, it helps on the cost side. It's still not, you know, I think the key here is better UX on the wallet side, right? Like, we need the tools to be like as foolproof as possible. And I think like hopefully we'll see, look, this is the Samurai's goal is like a holistic, view of it, right? So, like, you receive with a Paynim, you, like, run the Dojo node, you mix with Whirlpool, you spend with Stonewall. Like, I think that's probably the route that Wasabi will have to take as well, where you're basically, if you don't control the whole process, it becomes too hard for the user to, because, like, look, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't, you could add Schnorr. You can add Schnorr and you do P2EP transactions and like you look up your balance on like a Block Explorer or something.
And you're fucked.
Right? So like there's like the privacy guarantees aren't strong enough. And I've been saying this for a while, but they're way stronger. Like the improvements Wasabi and Samurai have made to accessible Bitcoin privacy are massive, and especially when you couple that with, you know,
Tor
with Lightning, yeah, funding Lightning nodes that are running through Tor. So I'm optimistic on that front, and I like to see competition among. It's good that we have more than one team working on this, but it is more difficult. When the different sides embellish claims and stuff, like everyone should just, our goal here should be to make using Bitcoin privately as easy and as effective as possible, like regardless of the software you're using.
I would completely agree. And I think that's one thing that you freaks out there, not you freaks out there, but like we all, not you freaks, I'm sorry for
being drunk.
Being drunk and disrespectful in that way. But we should all notice is that, yeah, this is something that you have to work on. It's something you have to be aware of. And let's just be upfront. Like, that's something I was trying to do this week in the Bent. Let's just be upfront with the capabilities, the vulnerabilities, and the boundaries that you're working within. And privacy in Bitcoin is not perfect right now. And the way that you achieve privacy is, I don't want to call it janky, but it's not straightforward. And it does take work, and it does take sort of minding what you're doing at each step of the way. And the more you know about each privacy solution, the better. And that's what we're trying to do here. So with Wasabi in particular, something we've been pumping for a while, and something that we're still very... I would still use Wasabi, just be cognizant of how you're using it and what can happen. Matt, your point.
I think that people like shouldn't be dissuaded from using either Wasabi or Whirlpool or both. But the key here is no matter what, you're getting more privacy than you were before. But Wasabi without the CoinJoin is still the absolutely best way to access your hardware wallet. And especially if you have your own node, which you should, then it's very easy to connect to your own node. If it's running on your own computer, it automatically works. It connects right to your hardware wallet. Like, that's super useful. That is in my mind, that's the best setup in terms of easily using your hardware wallet privately. I think these things will improve, and hopefully we'll see, you know, what the Wasabi team's response is here. But if none of these tools should be used in like life or death situations on their own. Like if you absolutely need it, like you should be layering things on top of each other so that if any individual thing is fucked, like you're in a good situation, whether that's a centralized mixer, whether that's going into, you know, an altcoin exchange and then coming back out, whether that's, you know, switching into a like Monero or something and switching back or paying with Monero, stuff like that. Like, you have to layer these things on top of each other for now because of the privacy guarantees.
So layering it on top of each other, would you analogize that to something like hashing a password, like for final message when you hash the password and send it? Is mixing this through Wasabi and then Samurai similar to that? Obviously, it's not perfectly similar, but it's a better guarantee than one over the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is just that is that you're reducing the trust in any given tool to work the way you think it's working, right? So that multiple, like in terms of like final message, for instance, like if you use it with like a multi-sig key, it not only is it encrypted, but if for some reason the encryption was compromised, if they got it, they would just have a single multi-sig key. There's nothing they can do with that. They can't take your funds, right? So it's important to, and this is like if you're using it in like a life or death situation, right? If you're just, you know, if you're trying to privately hold Bitcoin, and you know you did KYC at an exchange like Cash App or something like that, and you don't want your government to know like the exact amount you have, then it's, you know, it's a different threat model than if you're like a political dissident or something like that, right? So you have to, and because keep in mind when you layer these things, they get more expensive, right? But like, yeah, for like if you went into, this has always been the issue with Bitcoin privacy. It's less so the issue now, and I think it'll continue to get better, hopefully.
Yeah. Speaking of allocating resources to another software, Vitalik Buterin came out this week and said that they're thinking about, or he would posit, that Ethereum should store some data in the Bitcoin Cash chain before they transition to Ethereum 2.0. There's a big admission by Vitalik earlier this week that, hey, the Ethereum 1.0, 1.x chain, whatever you want to reference it as, is getting a little too fat, and they may need to expedite some data storage to other blockchains. What are your thoughts, Matt?
And also in terms of privacy, Cash is still king. You know, if you want the most privacy, you know, use Cash.
Not according to Steve Mnuchin.
Yeah, not according to Mnuchin, correct. I completely, with everything that went on, I completely forgot about this announcement, this blog post, until I was like, well, it was like one of the last things I added to the RHR agenda, and I was like, oh my god, I completely fucking forgot about it. How is it? I thought it was like an April Fool's joke or something. Like, I just couldn't believe that that was the reality, that he meant that with a straight face. He said, one of the most crazy parts of the whole announcement.
It was the block time.
What? Yeah.
Like him shitting on the block time. Like, oh, the main drawback of this is the 10-minute block time. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude?
That's the only drawback. That's what he came up with when the drawback of using Bitcoin Cash, just a completely insecure chain that has checkpoints and no usage.
Has been double spent and has been 51% attacked in the last 6 months. Your biggest gripe is their block time. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I hope they use the Bitcoin Cash chain to store data. You know, like, whatever. That's great.
Would that be enough incentive to 51% attack Bitcoin Cash into oblivion?
I don't know. I'm surprised it doesn't get 51% and more, since you can short it on MEX.
Right, that's what confused me this week, because I thought he would have come out and said, let's do it to BSV, because you can short that.
I found out you can short BSV on Finex. So I'm surprised they don't get 51% attack more. I guess, like, you need actual, like, activity on the chain to fully profit from, like, a... Like, if you have actual activity on the chain, then you can get guaranteed profit by doing an attack. But if there's no activity on the chain, then you're just banking on the price falling. And I don't know if that's actually a guarantee with these e-liquid forks, because, you know, I mean, look at when ETC got 51% attacked, it went up at first because people were, like, talking about it.
Yeah.
So then you, like, get liquidated. You, like, did the attack, and then, like, it moves in the wrong direction. And, yeah, so I don't know. It's
retail's
weird.
Retail's too dumb.
But maybe if they start storing data on the Bitcoin Cash chain, then fees will go up, which would also be hilarious, unless they raise the block size. And then if fees go up, then maybe it'll be worth it, the 51% attack. Maybe they'll just keep increasing the block size. Maybe nodes will start failing. That'll be fun.
Maybe they're right. You know, maybe that's the way to scale this shit.
Well, so he proposed it as, like, a stopgap for, it's like ETH 1.5, right? It's like a way to test ETH 2.0, but without
X. Oh, and that's another thing. So for you freaks that are unaware, Ethereum set a deadline for ETH 2.0 to be launched at the 11th anniversary of the Bitcoin Genesis block, January 3rd, 2020. Came out this week that is not the deadline. ETH 2.0 will not be ready by then. Whoever put that deadline out there is an idiot. They're dumb. They don't know what they're talking about. It's going to take way longer, which has been made evident this week. But one thing, we don't have to harp on that. I've got plenty of threads on how Ethereum will never transition to proof of stake. But one thread I want to focus on right now is your thread, Matthew, on the centralization factor of exchanges allowing people to stake on their exchange. And this week, Binance came out and said people will be allowed to stake Stellar on Binance soon, correct?
What's even funnier than that, they've been accidentally staking for, like, the last 6 months.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they didn't
realize.
How
do you accidentally stake?
They didn't realize. They brought, like, the Stellar team in to, like, set up the wallet or something, and I guess, like, staking was enabled, and they just realized.
So they have, like, 3% more Stellar than they thought?
They have a lot. Wait, what did I put in the link? It's crazy how much they have. So what they're doing is, so they announced that they're gonna allow you to stake it. It'll be the fifth chain that they're supporting for staking. And one of the things I theorized in this thread, which is from 2017, is that exchanges will actually incentivize people to stake by rewarding them more than they would get otherwise, because the exchange makes up for it in the fact that, first of all, they are a larger fees. Validator of the network, so they have more influence. And second of all, you'll stay at their casino and spend money. So what they're doing is they're going to give all those rewards proportionally out in the next month.
So they're trying to draw people in right now?
Yeah, exactly. So like you'll get basically the equivalent of a year's worth of staking in 1 month if you stake with them right now. They accidentally staked 9.5 million Stellar Lumens. That's almost $1 million, $775,000 worth of Stellar they accidentally staked.
Stellar's worth like 90 cents right now?
I mean, if your math was correct, I don't feel like looking it up.
I don't think it's correct, but it might be.
But yeah, continue.
For you freaks that may be new to Tales from the Crypt, Matt is somebody who's very on top of this very particular trend of exchanges staking proof of stake coins. And Matt can do a far better job than I can at explaining the inherent risk that comes with exchanges staking on behalf of users. Matt, dive into it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we already have the issue that exchanges have too much influence, too much control. I mean, we saw, first of all, they choose what they list, which we saw that type of style attack almost happen with SegWit 2x until the market pushed back. So it's hard to do it against something like Bitcoin, but you could see it working against some of the altcoins where, like, Binance got into a fight with Craig Wright and they, like, delisted SV, which was hilarious. But this gives exchange, all of a sudden, the exchanges aren't just the exchanges. Now they're also basically your miners of your network, right? They're the validators. They're the stakers of your network. They're securing your network. Now, do you want Binance to be like one of the top validators of your network? Like, I think that's pretty obvious to people that that's a bad idea. Not only does it give Binance a lot more power, Binance is a very easy to target organization. They have banking relationships. They have stuff like that. They're a multinational organization. Like if they want to pressure them, they have a really big target on their back. Not even just being a validator. They already have a target on their back. Now imagine if they start staking. They're already staking five chains now. Imagine if Binance is like the number one validator for like 10 different chains. Like then they don't even have like loyalty to your chain at all either, right? Like there's no, and then
they have loyalty to the most profitable. Yeah, I was gonna say they have loyalty to the most profitable at that point, right?
Right, exactly. And then the users are giving up their control. Usually, and my theory is for better payouts, whether that's quicker payouts, whether that's more amount of money, because the exchange can offer that. It depends which system. You know, because there's all these different proof of stake systems being floated about and stuff like that. But in some cases, there's thresholds that need to be made in terms of how much you need deposited. So there's already a direct incentive for smaller holders to have to go to these exchanges to stake. I mean, they could use like some kind of pool. But I think exchanges will make it convenient for them. They will make it potentially more, give them more rewards than they would have otherwise, and just make it overall really easy. And the same reason we see Coinbase holding hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin because people don't want to take custody of their own coins, we'll see the same thing, but even more so for proof of stake chains. And don't even get me started with what will happen when like the proof of stake chain ETFs happen, and like if that happens, like that's crazy. Like imagine like an Ethereum ETF with proof of stake, then all of a sudden, you know,
I'm down on the ETFs. I'm not as bullish on them as I was before. We don't need ETFs. They're bearer instruments. You can get access to them directly. Like, why do you even fucking need an ETF?
No, I mean, I agree, but I think they're inevitable. And I think with Bitcoin, there's no risk to them. I mean, there's risks to the people holding the ETF shares. Are the coins actually there? Will it follow the chain that I want it to follow? Is it going to go off on some bullshit KYC fork or something? You know, not your keys, not your coins, all those issues. But for Bitcoin, the system, there's no negative effect from a large holder, whether that's an ETF or whether that's an exchange. But in proof of stake, large holders are also large validators, and it becomes extra risky.
Sorry, dumb question. ETF goes into my traditional finance world. Why is an ETF beneficial in cryptocurrency?
So in my opinion, an ETF for Bitcoin, just from the consolidation of supply or the concentration of supply dynamic, is risky in many regards. It's not as risky as a proof of stake coin. So a proof of stake coin, with Bitcoin is proof of work. I'm explaining proof of work for proof of stake to my buddy on the bachelor party here. So proof of stake,
Craig.
So proof of stake means that you need to have a certain amount of supply of a certain coin to basically validate the chain up to that point in history. So you have to put up a bunch of capital denominated in the cryptocurrency of that particular chain. We'll use Ethereum as an example. They picture themselves transitioning to proof of stake at some point. And so at some point in the future, people will have to put up a certain amount of ether to basically validate that chain, the Ethereum chain, and they'll get rewarded via interest rates for that. Whereas Bitcoin is a proof of work system where you have to expend a bunch of computing energy to prove that something happened at some certain point of time. And if you do that, you are rewarded with Bitcoin right away. You don't have to stake Bitcoin. You don't have to have a certain amount of Bitcoin. You just have to have hardware and software running. You don't have to have capital. Well, you do have to have capital to pay for that hardware that runs the software, but it's arguably much less than the capital that you would need to gain a certain amount of stake in a proof of stake system. And what Matt is describing here is exchanges are naturally sort of via gravity and centralization factors, they accrue a lot of supply. So in a proof of work system, which is has happened to date, like Coinbase, Square, TCGB, they have a lot of Bitcoin supply, but they do not have any effect on the consensus of Bitcoin. The fact that they have a lot of Bitcoin has no effect on whether or not something is validated. Where in a proof of stake, if you have a lot of a supply and you stake that supply, you have a say in the consensus of the system. And this is a very fundamental difference between proof of work and proof of stake. The argument for proof of stake is that it takes a lot of less compute energy, so it's quote unquote better for the environment. But what a lot of idiots don't realize is that the capital expended to acquire the amount of stake needed to validate a chain is almost equivalent to the amount of energy expended in a proof of work system. Paul Stork at truthcoin.info has pointed this out a lot. Is that accurate, Matthew?
Yeah, that was pretty good, especially considering how drunk you are.
Wait. Let me just do my one thing. The only thing I can add here isn't the idea of an ETF. Someone big out there gets to go out and buy all these things that would be prohibitive for me as an individual to access, and I get to access it in this pooled vehicle. Where isn't a crypto always supposed to be accessible to me efficiently as an individual? Isn't that the point of it?
Exactly. So that's why I would say you do not need an ETF. You can buy it directly. Like, why buy the derivative when you can buy the bearer asset?
Exactly. It should be accessible to me without big markups or margins or whatever.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you for proving our point.
Except that two things. An ETF makes access easier because people are comfortable with ETFs. They're not comfortable with storing their own Bitcoin. They might still want exposure to the price of Bitcoin, but they're 60 years old. They can't send an email, but they know how to use TD Ameritrade or call their broker up. So it does give further access to people. It's not make or break. We don't need an ETF. I think it's a net positive, though. I think from Bitcoiner's perspective, it's a net positive because it'll make the number go up. And the price, you know, because more people buy Bitcoin, the higher the price goes. And I think for the average, like, tech illiterate person, like, it gives them the ability to get some exposure. We've seen Robinhood be very successful with that, and they don't allow you to custody. You're not allowed to take your coins off. You're just able to get exposure, and people use that. And the reason people use that, those people, I think, wouldn't be buying Bitcoin otherwise. They would not be able to go through the process to. And it'll get easier. It'll get easier to store your own coins in the future. But right now, it's easier than it's ever been. But it's still, you know, you still have to have some kind of tech literacy.
Yes. And the difference between a proof of work chain like Bitcoin
if you allocate your custody to an ETF versus proof of stake coin, like or Ethereum's not proof of stake yet, a proof of stake coin. If you allocate that to the ETF in a proof of stake system would then be able to validate that chain and dictate basically the rules of that chain. Where to proof of work chain like Bitcoin, that's simply not possible. Just because you own a bunch doesn't mean you get to dictate the rules.
Well, miners don't dictate the rules, just to be clear.
Exactly, exactly. But validators do.
Right.
In a proof of stake system.
Well, I mean, you still have nodes that are running that aren't that aren't staking nodes.
Yes.
But you wouldn't want control over block creation and stuff like that to be held by the largest holders.
Exactly. It's been a fun episode. What do you think this week? Is this week the most bullish week ever or the most questionable week ever? Like, are you more nervous, more bullish, more bearish than you were at this point last week? You were calling 13K. Let's not forget. You were calling for 13K by Monday last week. Right now?
That didn't happen. I think we're like at 10.5 or something last I checked, unless it collapsed while we were recording. I do feel the same way. I don't want to say it because I don't want to like jinx us or something. But I guess I just kind of said it. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we crash here. I don't know. But I feel really bullish. I'm always feeling bullish, but this feels like particularly bullish. Before we wrap up, there is one. They updated Sea Lightning that I wanted to just touch on real quick, because what's really cool about this update to Sea Lightning is they added what they're calling external wallet funding. So now it's possible to open channels from hardware wallets and open multiple channels with one transaction, which means you can also basically fund LN channels with CoinJoin with other people. You know, so it's like the actual funding transaction for the channel is a CoinJoin that funds multiple channels. This is pretty cool.
So it's like layered anonymity. There we go. I'm sorry. I'm drunk slurring right now.
Yeah, but I'll let you go to the bachelor party and we can touch on any of the other topics.
No, but before we leave here, one thing that we didn't touch on, and we're probably not going to touch on in depth here, but we've promised we will touch on, is BNP LN is the vernacular for the Bitcoin stack. And it's something we've been meaning to touch on. We promised people we'd touch on it. A little too drunk to talk about it tonight, but we will get to the vernacular of the Bitcoin stack because I think it does need some clarifying.
Yes, and we also have not forgot about you, 100 M Satoshi. We will
demystify the blocks. We will demystify the blocks. Actually, thank you for saying that. I got to look up before we're going to end it on shout outs here.
I like ending it on shout outs. It's a good idea.
Let me pull it up. Give me a sec here. Do you have anything you want to riff on before we pull up the shout outs?
I played with the Bitbox. My first impressions are it's all right. I still love the cold card. You were right. The Bitbox does have an SD card slot. It's for the backup.
I knew I was right.
They don't have like the feature where you can, you know, ferry transactions using the SD card. And also and they actually don't even give you a seed backup. They just back up to the SD card. What I didn't about that was the SD card is not encrypted. So kind of questionable. Not sure about that as a backup method. What was nice about the cold card is not only could you make backups with the SD card if you wanted, they also gave you a seed. And when you made a backup with the SD card, it was encrypted by default. And the password they gave you is a 12-word seed. So like if someone finds that 12-word seed, they'll probably think it's a wallet. They probably won't even think it's a password to your cold card backup. Like, I mean, unless you have like a podcast and like you talk about it on air, then they might know.
Then they might find you somehow and figure out what you're doing. You know, if you're just going to talk about this willy-nilly. All right, we got one shout out. Here it goes. Ooh, wrong one. Give me a second. Oh, yeah, here it is. Calling all bulls for the first annual UABM, or user-activated bull market, on Saturday, July 20th. That's 2 days from now. Saturday, July 20th, 2019, the 50th anniversary of the U.S. moon landing, Simply Market by Bitcoin at 00 UTC time. The Bitcoin Lawyer on Twitter, at Bitcoin underscore lobby, at Bitcoin underscore LOBBY, calling all Bitcoin bulls for the first annual UABM, or user activated bull market, this Saturday at 0 UTC.
Cheers to that, motherfucker.
That's 8 p.m. Eastern time. I just looked it up.
8 p.m. Eastern. This Saturday?
User-activated bull market? I'm down.
I'll stack some sats. If you haven't downloaded the Cash App yet, use the promo code STACKINGSATS and then come stack sats with us at 8 p.m. Eastern this Saturday.
Oh, yeah. That was my favorite theory for why the price crashed. It was because people stopped using Lolly for Prime Day.
I hand up. I was one of those people. Sorry.
I would love to see how much, like, I wish we could see the books to see how much Bitcoin Lolly users accumulate every week. It's got to be high numbers.
Alex, if you're listening, just tell us. Just tweet at us. Let us know. Matt, we've been away from each other for too long. Next week, we're going to be in the studio together. We've got a great bottle. We got to give a shout out to our buddy Matthew Case from Seattle, who gave us a fucking crazy bottle of whiskey that we're going to enjoy together next week.
Oh, did he really give us a bottle?
Oh, yes. He gave us a very good bottle.
Oh, is that the Heritage? Is it Heritage Distillery or whatever?
It showed up this morning right before I hopped on my flight.
Oh, my God. Fuck yes. Thank you, Matt. That's awesome.
Matt, not the Matt I'm looking at, but the Matt we're talking about. Thank you for that bottle. We'll be enjoying it in person. I can't wait to see you in person. I haven't seen you in like fucking a month.
It's going to be lit.
All right. That's all we got for this week, freaks.
Stay humble and stack sats.
Peace and love.